Here we go. 4 o'clock hour. Alex White is here. It's Cofield. This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada number. We are on in Reno and Northern Nevada. You got to dial 775-766-1400. When's the last time you went up to Reno?
Oh, not long ago. I'm up there often. Yeah. I was up there just for the state championship, volleyball.
We've talked about this many times, and we need to collaborate on a show up there when I'm with UNLV covering a game. But I'll tell you, here's the weird quirk with the Mountain West Conference basketball season. They have a package where they have a lot of Friday games. UNLV plays like three or four road games on Friday. So they're in Lawler on a Friday, which Alford's team is off to a pretty decent start. UNLV is not. So it should be at least 6,000 or 7,000. That'll be a good environment on a Friday night. So
yeah, no, we should plan on at least two things a year, maybe three. But for sure, UNLV, UNR for basketball when it's up there. And Reno Rodeo. We really got to go do Reno Rodeo. And then whenever they're playing for the Cannon up there.
All right. Next year it should be back here for the Cannon.
Yeah, it should be. Well, and also we can go to the new arena up in Tahoe to watch the, it's not the Night Dragons. I forgot the name. Night Monsters.
I'll tell you what, Thursday is must listen radio when Shannon Kelly from Nevada Sportsnet comes on.
Yeah.
Because she really gets beat up here. And it's all Jeff Choate's fault. Because as soon as Jeff Choate said they have everything down there and we have nothing, and then I expanded it to like the roads, the schools, I'm like, oh, we have everything, do we, Jeff? And then Shannon has to sit there and just have me yell about Northern Nevada. Like, I like Northern Nevada. I like Reno. I like going there.
Yeah.
But there are things they have that we don't have. And by the way, they're getting a new basketball arena. They have a new soccer stadium. And as you mentioned, in the area, they've got a hockey arena in Tahoe. And they somehow solved this mystery that we can't figure out down here with the LVCVA and pitching money at UNLV Athletics. With NIL, they're doing it for Nevada sports.
Well, I mean, they get a higher percentage.
Here we go. Be careful. You do business up there.
I know.
These are malicious facts, folks. Malicious facts. He was a public servant.
Get a higher percentage of tax revenue per capita in the north than, every county does outside of Clark County. It's a higher percentage of the tax revenue for expenditures per capita. So, I mean, from that perspective, if they're going to spend wisely, they are going to have more resources than the South has on a per person basis. And they do. You know, they do. They also need more services than we do in a lot of ways because of the weather up there. The roads are more challenging. The safety equipment more voluminous. So, you know how I feel on that, and you're trying to get me started, and I'm just going to say I love my Reno people. I love going up there, and we got to go up there more often.
I mean, I turned it into an overall discussion about Northern and Southern Nevada based on Jeff Choate. He's right. UNLV does have a lot more right now for football in terms of funding and stadium than Wolfpack football. Here's where I'm disappointed in you folks in Northern Nevada. Our public servants, sort of, the DMV, has asked for help with these criminals around the state. They ask for your help when you see someone driving around with no license plate or expired registration. You do your part, your civic duty, you report them. I'm like, no one up there is reporting things. I saw the story in the Reno Gazette Journal. I'll tell you what, we're enthusiastic about this. Yeah. Are we not in Southern Nevada? Wait until you hear these
21,000 calls.
Since October. But like 17 are from down here.
I know.
18,000. You're ready? And none are from me.
No, zero?
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, no, here's the thing. I got my photo bank, whatever this is called. I take at least 3 photos a day of people without a license.
Okay, you send them in?
I'm not exactly sure how to do this because I'm all about following somewhere. And then when they go into their house or because I'll do it or whatever business, I'll get their VIN. But what's the point?
Going up and looking through their windshield to get their VIN?
What are we going
to
do? We got to do it right. What do you just, oh, it's a black Chevrolet, with no license plate. They're not going to track that person down. Isn't the VIN the key?
So wait,
I gotta take a photo of the person. Hey, smile. Where's your license plate? Flash it. How are they actually reporting this?
What's your name? Yeah, have you taken the picture of somebody's VIN?
No.
Okay. Have you called the hotline?
No. But I do. I probably have 20.
It sounds like you're on the fence, though. If you tried it once and had a really good experience, you might be a frequent caller.
I'm not the lunatic or snitch that I portray. Although I do think, in a lot of the cases, people are skirting what they should be doing. We're paying what we have to pay, and it's dangerous too. You know, you get hit by someone, and you just roll off, and you never know who the hell they are. What I do see a lot of times is there's no plate, but then there'll be a piece of paper up in the front window or a dimly lit paper in the back window. So I'm thinking, did something happen with the DMV in terms of getting paperwork and licenses and like the actual driver's license, the license plate? I'm sorry, because they had that whole computer shut down for like weeks, right?
Well, a lot's happened.
You laughed at me like 4 years ago when I said it was an epidemic. It legitimately is an epidemic. There's got to be something going on where this many people don't have plates.
Well, in my opinion, they never fully recovered from COVID when they had, you know, basically you couldn't walk in anymore. You had to create these appointments, and they knew that every one of these paper registrations they were going to mail were going to expire. Like, you cannot comply with the deadline that's set on that paper. It's impossible. And I feel like from that moment on, they've been trying to change the nature in which you interact with the DMV, and it really hasn't caught on to the point where I just don't think police, if they see a piece of paper, they're like, eh.
Because they've probably heard the story a million times too, and it doesn't mean it's a fake story.
Right, I can't get an appointment. Or my appointment's in May, and it's December right now, and that's the soonest I could get. Because I have, you know, I work, whatever. I got to do it on a Saturday. No Saturdays are available until May. But I'm just laughing in my head about imagining your first call there. It's like, you know, longtime fan, first time caller. Hey. You know, I've got 25 in the bank ready to go. How do we want to do this? Chronologically? You want to do it by area? You know, heat map? What are we doing here?
I mean, I would assume most people who are out without a license plate, like, they live a life. I see them driving. They have to stop somewhere. They're at stores. They're at parking lots. So I guess people easily could go up and just get the VIN.
Well, I mean, from my
perspective, honestly, I don't care. I mean, if that's the way I go out, that's the way I go out. I'm doing my civic duty.
Hey, I actually don't have a problem with it. Like, it's not how I want to spend my time, but it's not by judgment. Like, people who are driving around without insurance and registration are taking money directly out of your pocket. They are. Making it worse for the rest of us. Our insurance rates are higher. Underinsured motorist rates are higher. You know, everything that you do as a law-abiding citizen on the roadway now becomes more expensive because the insurance companies have to price in the percentage of known uninsured drivers on the road. They know the number. So we all pay for it.
So is this snitching actually killing us? Does it come back to
No.
Insurance companies are like, 21,000, raise the rates, everyone! Christmas bonus!
They're going to raise the rates no matter what. You know that.
They're going to raise the rates. Justin tells us every year you have to shop your rates or you're a sucker.
Yes. But no, I think it's a good thing. And then it's likely if there ever is a chance to minimize the raising of rates, it's through something like this where the DMV, Nevada DMV and the state can show the insurance companies, look how many people we've gotten to comply with insurance because of this hotline. We could show you volumes of calls, you know, give our citizens a break on their insurance rates and maybe you get there. So again, I'm not going to spend my time calling it, but I've also
cool if I do.
Yeah, but I've also got two teenage girls, and when they leave the house, I mean, maybe I'll find myself on the phone calling all the time about people who don't have their license plates. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I would encourage it. I think it's fine. I think it's good.
I peeked out the window to see Alex's car. I was just trying to think. On the Cofield & Company staff, the company and the contributors, I wonder if there is a person who... Kind of that whole like fall behind thing and then like make excuses.
Adam Hill.
Possibly, yep.
If first person in my mind of who's driving around with a paper plate from 23.
Yep. What can I do?
Yeah, I couldn't get an appointment.
Some excuse.
Yeah. I'm covering the Raiders. I'm covering VGK. And then, you know, you get a cop pulls him over as a fan.
Justin Watkins is here. So you got an ego stroke as soon as you walked in the room as Alex was like, oh, fantasy football, you're killing it, huh? And I'm like, I bristled him.
Oh, well, I've had a long, bad history of coming on here and rubbing one of the company's nose or you nose in a victory and then summarily losing the next week in the playoff. So I'm really apprehensive to do any of that. I'll just say, in our league, I have liked my team all year.
It's finally coming together.
No, not finally. I was second in points, first in points the whole year until the last week of bye weeks were.
By the way, you can tell I never look at the standings. I actually did. I knew I made the playoffs because I checked like 2 days before. I don't look at final scores. I sort of knew where I was.
Yeah.
My team just, you know, it just didn't work out.
Yeah. No, my team, I have a very good team. I liked that team all year. I felt great going into the playoffs. I thought, you know,
were your running backs? I knew I was dead with the running backs.
Oh, CMC and Achan.
Yeah.
And then
so
you got
Christian McCaffrey because I was driving across town during the draft and I was in on him. And then we have a 260 budget. It was $48, right?
Mm-hmm.
I still remember. So I'm not lying about that. I remember being in on it, and then I was like, whoa!
Like, I was like, how did that just happen?
Bid. I'm like, he can't go for that cheap. Now, you would have got him because you would have bumped it up more, and I would have given
totally.
Up. But...
Yeah. No, I told you I was going to flip this year, and I was going to get good running backs. And then I still got receivers because I got St. Brown and Drake London. London going down has hurt a lot, but I also didn't basically...
That was the one I saw on Sunday when he went off. Same problem. Right? He went off. Yeah. I almost wanted to call him Equanimeous, but he went crazy.
Yes. And, you know, I didn't draft a quarterback basically at all, and I was scrambling, and then Brock Purdy fell in my lap, and Jackson Dart fell in my lap, and then I even took a flyer. This is why I didn't win the points championship. I took a flyer on Daniels. He was on the waiver wire. I took him 2 weeks before he came back, put him in, and then, of course, he got hurt.
How many fantasy football leagues are you in? Do you play?
I do.
Okay, what kind of leagues? Are they straight draft?
Yes.
Do you have a free agent budget during the year?
In one of them, okay. I do. On full-time fantasy. So that one, yeah, we got like $1,000 budget
what
for
do you
the
have
year.
Now? Are you out?
No, I'm 7-7, so I'm okay. I got a chance.
Do you know
still.
What you have left for a free agent budget?
Oh, yeah, I've got like $900.
Oh, you spent nothing. Well, that could be good right now. Because I'm in a league that I've never played in before. And I think our original budget for free agents was $260. I looked up yesterday. We still had 223. Three of the four people who were in the playoffs had like 9 and 0. Now, I don't know if that's going to pay off.
Right.
I was able to pick up a couple of players that I wanted. It doesn't mean they're going to deliver. It's a semis now. Mm-hmm. But then this league is also weird because you can keep doing pickups and there's consolation brackets. So everyone can make pickups.
Well, see, I like the way that our league
like
runs
seconds
it
left.
Where they lock the... You know, you go into the playoffs
so
and it's locked because I had to make some moves. I'm like, well, I need a backup if this guy goes down. And I know I got to drop some good people because I need to have a lineup. So I like the way our league does it. I think it's good.
There's a lot of legal stuff going on in college football, more with player eligibility. Now coaches are striking back on NCAA penalties. This is fascinating. Justin Watkins here on a Wednesday.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas. And ESPN Reno.
All right, Justin Watkins is here. Alex White. If you want to watch, we're up on live stream on ESPN, Facebook, ESPN, Las Vegas, Twitter. A lot to get to. We were just talking about the NFL during the break because we love the NFL. We were just talking about the Raiders and their struggles. But I'll tell you one place they're not struggling, and that is valuation of the franchise. Mark Davis is becoming a very, very, very rich individual. And if you remember back, he wanted L.A. so bad. His dad wanted L.A. so bad. I know you saw a recent graph with valuations. It's worked out for the Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a Charger fan, you know, I saw this graph of all the valuations of every pro sports franchise. And it was, you know, interesting to see. I thought the NFL teams were going to have such a huge shift on all the other sports of being so much higher valued across the board. And they were, but not to the disparity that I thought. But what was interesting to me is the Raiders were 7th or 8th, right there, top 10, but close to top 5 in valuation. And I'm like trying to find that Chargers logo all the way down at the bottom down there. And it wasn't the very bottom, but it was so clustered towards the bottom that, you know, There's no reason to think it's not in the bottom 10 for sure. Maybe even the bottom five. And, you know, I just immediately went back because I often go back to that moment in time where we were this close to getting the Chargers, which I would have loved as a Charger fan, and the Raiders were fighting for L.A., and the Chargers were fighting for L.A., and the Rams knew they had L.A., and it seemed like the chances that we were going to get the Chargers were better than not. And I was real excited about it. I was really looking forward to it, and then it happened the way it did. Chargers get L.A., Raiders come to Vegas, and the rest is history. And I wondered, you know, after looking at that graph, do the Chargers regret, you know, making that move or making that pitch and not just taking Vegas that was served to them on a silver platter? Would their valuation be any better, or is the Raiders' valuation really tied to brand and brand recognition nationwide and has nothing to do with where they're playing football?
I think part of it's brand. Would I be insane to say that I think MD has taken advantage of Vegas better than the Spanos family would, that he actually, in this case, has more business acumen, which no one in the league would have said 10 years ago because they thought he was a doddering fool when they bullied him, which pissed me off to no end when they were like, you're not coming to L.A. Like, what?
I don't think the thing that's improved the value of that franchise the most has anything to do with Mark Davis's acumen. It has to do with Adelson's. I mean, getting that stadium, getting it where it got, for the amount it got, could not have been done by Mark Davis by himself. Could not have been done.
Yeah,
it took Sheldon Adelson to get behind it, to push that, to get it done.
Which is still amazing because he got behind it, then bailed out thinking like, hey, it's done. And then Jerry Jones came in and just gave him the finishing touches with a big loan from Bank of America. And the rest is history.
Yep. I mean, I think that's what did it. So, yeah, could the Spanos family have fumbled that? Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yes, they could have. They could have, right? Like, you know, I think the A's saw how maybe not so easy it is to just come into here and get things done. You need some local, longstanding political power to get something through, like an Adelson. You know, eventually the A's got their thing through, but boy, did they, you know, suffer for it and it took a lot more time than they wanted, and they didn't get as much money as they wanted, and all those things, you know. So it'll be interesting, and it all came to mind, too, because, you know, I read this morning in the RJ, we got Adam Silver saying, yeah, we'll make a decision on Vegas and Seattle in 26, you know, but makes the comment of basically like, hey, they've got everything coming now. We think it's a basketball town, but there's like this but out there of like, how much can, you know, is everybody looking at Mark Davis going, any fool can make a bunch of money in Vegas? Is that what they think? Because I think, like you said, Adelson's a big part of it. Him buying the Aces is a big part of it. He has made a real effort to try to be a Las Vegan. And
it's also the NFL. So, you know, we've mentioned multiple times, like, John Fisher needs a winning team here eventually. Like, you're not going to just, hey, it's Vegas.
Eventually, right off the bat.
I agree. I mean, yesterday, I don't want to get into it because I don't want to take shots. We had one of our friends on. And he was talking about like the build for 3 years. I'm like, no, the build starts now.
Yeah.
They have Nick Kurtz on the team. He's awesome. They have a good hitting team, good young team.
Right.
Not going to be able to keep all these guys together. Start winning now. And also, the way you build a fan base here is to start winning now. It's not a fresh start when you get here. It's now.
Yes.
So anyway, that's
so
that's
we're a, hungry that's, for yeah. it. We can't wait
that's
for them
a whole
to get here.
Freaking rant. We
it's,
can't do
it's
today.
A whole thing we should be discussing
got,
right now, Steve.
We have limited time, Justin. Don't take us off the rundown. Okay. I saw multiple dudes this week, and later on we'll play a soundbite from this Pete Golden guy who really put his foot in his mouth about what players make and where they live. Eli Drinkwitz did it again, the Missouri coach. Now, he was the one, if you remember, about 3 years ago. He's like, these kids are making more than my brother, who's a doctor. So are you! So are you! You coach football, Eli! And he was whining again this week about how everything is broken. And you know, one of the biggest reasons it's broken is that coaches turned a blind eye and they're like, oh, I'm making $2 million, $4 million, $6 million, $8 million, $10 million. Like, I'm living like a friggin' king, and you just thought you were going to do that forever? This college system gets freaking taken to court every week from so many different fronts. The labor practices are so outrageous. It is one of the, I mean, they literally, what they've been doing is akin to, I don't know, go back to the robber barons. And they just thought they were going to get away with it forever, except that the court system exists. So now we've had all these players go and sue for extra eligibility. Latest case that you found was this 5-5 thing, right?
Yep.
That players were like, hey, we can be there for 5 years, but we can't make money for 5 years. I can't play for 5 years. Headline was Power Conference Commissioners Defend NCAA Redshirt Rule in Court.
It was interesting because where they went with this was, you know, we need to provide opportunities for the next generation, and that's why this is pro-competitive behavior in having eligibility rules. But as the players pointed out, I think, astutely, is, but I'm still taking a roster spot as a redshirt. So there's no added roster spot because you're not paying me to practice. I still have to practice. I still have to show up to games. I still have to do all my obligations, but I'm not allowed to play, and I'm not allowed to get paid. And so you've got to, you know, your rules don't make any sense, and you're just simply trying to backdoor in a free year of services is what you're trying to do. And so from – and – we, you even have these weird rules where the coach can play me for 3 games and the playoffs. So, like, you can play me, you know, and I still maintain a redshirt year and I don't get paid. And I, like, the rules don't make any sense. And what I loved about that story is it was, like, buttressed right with a story of an Alabama judge getting Jeremy Pruitt off the off the hook.
He's the former Tennessee coach
who had a 5-year show cause hearing, is applying for a position at Jackson State. They petitioned the NCAA to allow him to hire him. The NCAA actually said yes, but Pruitt sued anyway.
Good.
And the Alabama judge is like, yeah, you know what? I'm looking at this stuff from this new antitrust angle. And what does the NCAA get to say when coaches get to work or
and
not
it's so
work?
Arbitrary.
Yeah, it's totally.
I mean, listen, I'm not a Harbaugh guy, but Harbaugh, he's got a show cause for 14 years.
Yeah.
By the way, Jesse Minter, who could coach in college, has one until April based on some recruiting violations. Like, there's no rhyme or reason.
Right. Well, and there's no...
He didn't cooperate.
There's
okay,
no...
Okay, let's take that to court. And you want? Do you want to talk about cooperation? Let's have full disclosure here.
And there's no collective bargaining from the coaches either. It's not like they agreed to this process or an appeal process or any of that. So I liked it because we're looking at the antitrust from a labor pool, and up until this point, that labor pool has all been the athletes, because certainly nobody's crying for the coaches. I get you there. But it was just interesting from a legal perspective to watch that application happen, and I was wondering, how is that ever going to happen for a coach? And the show cause is the perfect time for the NCAA to get their tails kicked again for unilaterally determining labor practices without collective bargaining. And it's it just opened the doors. It opened the doors.
It's
anybody who's going to show cores.
It's anti-labor and it's corrupt. And,
yes.
You know, let's, if we want to do a test case, the guy who should have sued originally, there's a lot of guys, but Kelvin Sampson got skewered over stuff that was not illegal a couple years later.
Mm-hmm.
He was at Indiana, you know, texting, like too many texts. And look at what, you know, now he's coaching. He's 72 years old. He's still a great coach, but he missed, you know, a good couple of years in his prime. All right, on the field.
Yeah.
College football playoff.
Okay.
We got 4 games. Yes. I know Alex has angles. We got to do pro versus Joe. We love this. Are you playing all 4 games?
No. No. I mean, I'm, God, I played 3 of them, which I thought.
No, not 4. I got 3.
I can't believe I played 3. But I just couldn't help myself. I wanted to play. There's 2 that really jumped out at me. And then I got scared about the fact that those jumped out of me, and I went with a 3rd one. So let's start with Oklahoma, Alabama.
Friday night.
Yes. I like Oklahoma here. They're only getting 1.5. I wish it was a little bit more. I would have loved to get that number closer to 3, but I think Oklahoma is going to win this game outright. Alabama has a bunch of their coaching staff that's part-time right now. Their offensive coordinator is part-time right now. Their co-defensive coordinator is part-time right now. Oklahoma staff is intact. And so I think that that weighs heavily here, and I like the Sooners.
I like the Sooners, too.
Oh.
I think they win this game. A lot of people are handicapping this because the first time around, Alabama outgained them. They lost the turnover battle, but I think that was by design. You're getting the better defense with Oklahoma, right? And Alabama has no run game, so they forced Ty Simpson to throw the ball a lot, and that's where he got into trouble. So I think it could happen again. I think Mateer, too. A little extra time. Heal that hand. Maybe Oklahoma's offense comes around a little. We'll see. But okay. I definitely like the defense at home.
On the way back, I fully admit I'm way too emotional about the little guy. So I need some advice from both of you on Tulane and Ole Miss, and especially James Madison. I've heard so much blasphemy about James Madison and the little guy and how the, you know, these former FCS, how dare, you know, they're barely in the FBS. They can't compete. It's a safety issue. We'll get to the rest of the CFP on the way back.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, we got to talk hats in a couple seconds, but I want to get the college football in here. Justin Watkins, pro versus Joe. Alex is the pro. Justin Watkins is the Joe, although you've had a good season on some fronts. It faded a little bit lately. So CFP takes. You guys are both on Oklahoma. I have gone back and forth literally every day on Miami and Texas A&M.
So, yeah, I mean, I think everybody thinks that Miami's better than what they are because there was so much chatter about whether they got in. And so everybody's just had been hyper-focused on their resume. I think Texas A&M's way better than Miami. It's 3.5, which I don't, you know, it'd be nice if it was 3 and I didn't have to give that half point. But I think Texas A&M's going to win this game. I think they're going to win it handily.
I've been back and forth, too. My number is 3. But I'm going to be on Texas A&M as well. I think just looking at the full season, you got to go with the more consistent team. And I know we've seen some struggles from Marcel Reed down the stretch, but I like Mike Elko. I believe in him. I think they're going to definitely win this first game. So I might just do a money line and avoid the spread there because I do think it could be close at the end.
Yeah, I mean, the history says crystal ball's not great in the playoffs and postseason. Elko, we'll see. Here he goes. This is his chance.
Let's find a dog to play. Tulane getting 17.5 against Ole Miss. And is it 21.5 or 21 on JMU in Oregon?
It is 21.
Yeah. I saw 21.5 this
morning. Oh, you saw that hook?
Yeah.
Can we make a case for either one?
I mean, I bet Tulane. And I don't know what to do with it because they're both lost their coaches. Except it seems like the only thing I can say is that Tulane coach departure seems much more amicable. They seem to be working cohesively towards like making this Tulane team the best it can be in this playoff, where I feel like Ole Miss is just, they might win this game by 50 because they're so fired up to show everybody that they can win without Lane Kiffin, or they could just step on the rake and smack their face.
And we don't even know how many guys are following Lane Kiffin, right? I mean, we're saying that they're going to be, I don't know, all in this against Lane, but we don't really know that. I would make a case for Tulane over James Madison because I've seen Oregon. We saw him beat up on Oklahoma State earlier this year. We've seen Dan Lanning do this. But Tulane, they've already seen him once. I was impressed with them last week in the championship game or 2 weeks ago against North Texas. The defense really stepped up. And Retzlaff, he came from BYU. This is a Power 4 school, right?
Oh, it's dangerous for him to be out there playing in a game like this.
He's played in some big games last year.
I think like Oregon, you know, it's got consistency at top, but they have lost almost all of their coordinators.
That's true.
Like almost every single coordinator is gone, but they're coaching this week. I think Dan Lanning is a pretty steadying force at the head of that program. But did you just compare James Madison to Oklahoma State?
Yes.
Come on now. James Madison's better than Oklahoma State. Who cares if everybody beat up on Oklahoma State? That's no big deal. So,
well, it was 72 to what?
Yeah.
I'm just saying
Lanning
they
might actually have some respect for Bob Chesney. I think he wanted to freaking lay the wood on Gundy after Gundy whined during the week about, we don't have what they have. Like, you're Oklahoma State. Cut it out.
Yeah. I just don't think James Madison's guy. I think Oregon is going to be fired up. They've been here before. Lanning's been here before. I think they're going to be in good shape.
With that being said, do you remember Ohio State? I mean, they put it on Oregon last year, so I don't think that they're going to have a problem. Not that they want to embarrass the little guy, but I mean, they really want to come out strong this first game. But I would be worried about them losing both coordinators for the rest of this.
Well, yeah, both offensive and defensive and assistant coaches who are going with those respective coordinators. So, like, their whole coaching staff is being depleted right now. So
can they really make a run?
Yeah, anytime you've got a coach who's trying to have one foot in each of those positions, I just think that's incredibly challenging. You talked about how Dan Mullen spoke to the impossibility of that position.
He admitted it. He's like, I was in this position. I saw other guys in this position. It's hard.
Yeah.
Because you got to do both jobs. You can't. Say, oh, 90% of my time is on my current job. Like, no, it's not.
Dude, portals open. Yeah. Like, you got to be recruiting. Yeah. You got to really build out your roster for next year.
So which little guy are you taking?
Tulane. We're up against it, Tulane. I believe me, I'm going to root in hard for JMU. I hope they play a competitive game.
Yeah.
I really do.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right. Well, we got some picks from the Joe. And Alex gave an agreement on Oklahoma and Alabama. We're going to get to NFL and definitely CFP as John Von Tobel is up with Cofield and Company. John, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Nothing. Just watching Vandy play Memphis right now in college basketball. Might be the best team in the SEC. I like this time of year because now that college football calms down, we get to watch a little bit more college hoops. So tonight, a big college hoops night.
I'm feeling holiday-ish. Because Justin Watkins just got a gift from the show. He liked it. And what I'm most happy about is that he left the bag behind so that I can reuse the bag.
That's why I was on the table. I was thinking that. Don't forget
this. I have a whole bin of bags. I'm like, he didn't take the bag. This is a bonus. I got him something for the show. And
I didn't realize there were so many of you freaks out there because that's the way that Isabel is as well. My wife, she has a collection of used gift bags that we hold on to just in case. And oddly enough, the just in case never happens. So we just have a collection of bags.
Yeah, I have like 75 and we go through like 12. It's pointless. Okay, Oklahoma, Alabama, and CFP. Where are you going to go on this one?
So I'd be curious to hear what the agreement was on this. I'm going to go. I say this trepidation because I don't know where you guys are going. Oklahoma? Is that the consensus? Is that where we're at right here? I know a lot of people, probably part of the assumption here is, hey, Alabama moved the ball on them last time, and they're going to be able to do it again, except this time, if they don't lose the turnover battle, throw a pick six and all that good stuff, then they're going to be able to do this again and win this game. I just don't buy that at this point, watching Alabama offensively. I know the hope is that maybe they're going to be a little bit healthier by the time they play on Friday, but look, this offense is extremely one-dimensional. They are, I think, problematically one-dimensional. They can't run the ball. Ty Simpson has been getting abused. He's been getting hit a lot in the last few games. Pressure rate's really high over the last couple of games, and I like this front a ton. I think there's an argument to make that maybe that Oklahoma, if you really dive into it, some of the best offenses they've faced have moved the ball on them and they're maybe not as good. I still think this is a well-above unit, and I think right now the way that the Sooners are playing, that the Crimson Tide are playing, they raise the floor of any defense they face right now, and this is one of the better ones in the country. So give me Oklahoma. I'll take them at home here as a short favorite.
Yeah, that's where we were too, JVT, and you pretty much broke it down just like I did. Let's go to the other big one here, the two teams that beat Notre Dame. What are you doing, Texas A&M or Miami, Florida?
I like Miami. You know, I'm actually kind of kicking myself, Alex, because I thought, like, that 3.5 is going to be out there. And it's gone. You know, it's actually – I'm looking at one shop that's far away that's at 2.5 minus 130. So I think Miami's the side here for me. I understand – if these two teams are probably pretty close to one another, so you probably just hang up home field, whatever you think is worth out there at Texas A&M and put it up. But I have a slight edge in my assessment of these teams toward the Hurricanes. I don't trust Mario Cristobal in big moments, and I know that this is going to be one, but I really do like Miami's strength along both lines, offensive and defensive. Beck has played a little bit in some of these types of games, and on top of that, I still, you know, it's kind of unfair, but I still don't trust Marcel Reed. And it's almost like a bad relationship with like a husband or a wife where you're just waiting for the other to slip up and they can be perfect for like 6 months straight. But then on that seventh month and that one day, you're like, hey, wait, see, look at this is what I'm talking about, man. You never do this for me. I think it's the same thing with Marcel Reed for me. That last game against Texas turned me off and it's been something I've been waiting for. And I think a step up in class is going to expose a little bit more of what we've seen from Reed. So give me Miami.
Will you lay the lumber with Oregon, with Ole Miss?
Of the two, that's the one, like of the two big favorites, I think that's the one I'm most comfortable. Look, we can talk about all the mismatches in the world and everything that we're talking about with Oregon. I think one of the things that I keep bringing up, this is totally non-data point, and I recognize that as I am about to make this. Don't you think that Dan Lanning and this team, the ones that are still around from last year, kind of have a bad taste in their mouth from the Rose Bowl from a season ago and are just going to take out all of their frustrations from that playoff blowout loss to Ohio State on this poor James Madison team? I mean, if you talk about, and look, it's a must win because it's the playoff, but you talk about losses that you cannot take, or not even losses, close games that you cannot afford. I think that's Oregon, because Lanning doesn't want to start to build the mentality and the narrative that he can't show up in some of these contests. So I think Oregon is the side. I'm not going to personally lay it, but in the context of this conversation, what would I rather have? It would definitely be lay it with the Ducks here against JMU.
John Von Tobel is up on Cofield and Company, Company for Life. One of the great success stories in the history of Lotus Broadcasting in the sports department, now working over at VSIN as part of our programming on Raider Nation Radio 920. I love that. And also 1230, The Game, that is VSIN programming as well. I'm going to jump to Sunday. But before I do that, I got to say, you got to follow JVT. John, with the holidays, I got almost a little verklempt. The nice picture of you and your sons, that was great, man. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah,
all the things you've done, that's something to be real proud of. Those guys are they're some good looking dudes, man. That was a good picture.
I think it was a good picture. That's why I put it up. But to further my standing in our community, I was out at a Silver Knights game last night. That's where we were. So we were supporting our local sports teams by going and checking them out. They had a great time. After the game, we got to go down on the ice and take pictures. So that was fun. It was part of like some birthday special. A family friend of ours. It was their birthday, so we all went out there. Danny Smythe was out there as well, actually, a Lotus success story. I think so. He was out there as well. So now, look, my kids are good looking kids. I'm proud to be their dad, and I think it was a good picture. And the mustache looks good as well.
The mustache looks very good. You fight the fight over at VSIN if they don't like the freaking mustache.
That's right.
An inside joke. All right, Patriots and the Ravens. Man, the more dissing of the Patriots with the Ravens. Not a gigantic favorite, but the Ravens are favored. What do you want to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think, if anything, maybe look at Baltimore as like a team total side, if you wanted to do that. Like, I worry about New England here a little bit, only because, the one time that you run into a legitimate offense and you completely wilt, especially in the second half, the Bills moved it up and down. You couldn't stop them at all. And I wonder if Baltimore, maybe quietly trying to find their stride here, looking a little bit better, started generating some explosives against the Cincinnati Bengals, getting to take on a Patriots defense that, by all different metrics, if you looked at some of the numbers over the course of this season, was actually shockingly close to average, despite the fact that they played one of the easiest schedules in the NFL and maybe in NFL history. So now when you take on a team that has the skill position talent that Baltimore does, I think that you're probably going to have a big problem here. So team total for Baltimore, I'd lean toward laying it, although I know that some spots are starting to get off that 3 to 2.5. But I think you got to be worried here a little bit about New England. Iron sharpens iron, if you will. And their iron has been matching up with, I think, some blunt wooden blocks all season long. And I don't think they're very sharp as they head into the postseason.
What are you doing here with the Bucks and the Panthers, who both lost last week, so now a very meaningful head-to-head game, and they still have another one coming up, but Tampa Bay favored by 3 on the road.
Well, I lean a little bit towards Carolina. They do better in this role. I hate saying that because that's such like a cliche handicap thing. They're just better in the dog role. But they really have performed better against the spread when they've caught these points, especially at home. We know about them. They've lost, 13 straight. Carolina has now as a favorite at the close. Now here, where you have a better complement of weapons outside of Tedderoic McMillan, who is maybe a little banged up. I think mispracticed today, but the hope is that he's going to be available. But I trust the ability to run the ball here. And I don't trust Tampa Bay, man. I don't think they're well-deserved to be in this sort of a role. We got a taste of that last Thursday in what essentially was kind of a must-win for the Buccaneers on the Thursday night against Atlanta. Delayed an egg. Now we're expecting they're going to cover a key number against Carolina. I understand the market's trepidation with the Panthers. They lose that game again to New Orleans, blow that double-digit lead. They had a double-digit lead, and I think that they're going to be much better as a home dog catching a field goal here.
All right, John, I don't really look too much at spots in the NFL. I understand the Chargers just beat the Chiefs. They've got the Texans next, but Should they be an underdog to the Dallas Cowboys?
No. I'm with you. I don't think it's like a spot thing, too. It's like, look, I mean, well, like if you look at the, so I've been using Alex. I don't know how you've been evaluating it, but I think home field for me has been worth about 2 points so far this year. And if that's the case, then we're looking at this in the market telling us that these two teams are equals to one another. Right. Some spots are starting to show 2.5. I don't think that's the case, man. Like, I think the Chargers are slightly better than Dallas. Look, I have my trepidation with the Chargers overall, the offensive lines thing, so we can go down the list of why we would not really fully trust them. But at the end of the day, if we're just talking about pure evaluation of the two teams, I think that L.A. is better than Dallas. And so just by the number alone, I think there's value in going with the Chargers here as opposed to the Cowboys.
What do we want to do, John Von Tobel, with Detroit and Pittsburgh?
This one, I'm leaning a little bit toward Detroit, but you have to wonder. I mean, so we see the last two games for the Pittsburgh Steelers that this offense kind of comes to life a little bit. However, in the game against Baltimore, we saw that Aaron Rodgers was throwing deep passes left and right. He had 11 completions of 20 or more yards in the previous starts going into the Baltimore game. He had 4 of them in that game alone. Had another one on Monday night against Miami.